Spirit Radio Podcasts.
It is my absolute pleasure, privilege, and excitement to have our very own Miz in the studio.
Our very own Miz. I've come all the way in from the news desk for this, so
it's quite a long way.
Oh, I'm getting my steps in. I've done 4 so far today. Bit of
I
success.
Think you were in studio with Keith earlier as well, so there's a bit more than 4, Miz, to be honest.
Okay, let's be honest. I've 16 steps in so far.
Exactly. I'm glad to hear it. I'm going to get my own as well, just walking over and back outside. As always, however, it's been a busy week for celebrity news.
It has, and I've been a busy gal following up on all of it, so you don't have to.
Good stuff. First of all, Miz, let's start with some Irish showbiz news, because rumour has it that Niall Horan, who we've talked about, who has been breaking hearts in the golfing community, the more traditional golfers will be a little bit heartbroken, but he's also breaking many a girl's heart, as I'm sure, because he does have a girlfriend, is that correct?
Yeah, so Niall finally realised he wasn't going to be able to get with me, which was devastating for him.
It was.
So he had to try and find someone else. Instead, he's got this girl called Amelia Woolley. They've actually been going out for a while. This is the thing, they've been on the sly, pretty quiet about the whole thing. So I think they've been connected with each other for about a year or so. And she is from Birmingham. She's 23, for anyone that wants to try and stalk her, or, well, you know,
maybe don't do that.
But anyway, so this is one of his longest relationships because, you know, Niall always seems like the innocent, nice guy in One Direction. But nay, he actually was a bit of a player.
Okay.
And was always having like very short-term relationships with many women. His most high-profile relationship he ever had was with the singer Hailee Steinfeld. Do you know her? She's an actress.
No, I'm sorry.
In the Disney world. Anyway, so he's now seems, and apparently things between Niall and Amelia are getting serious. And things are heating up. So I think it's time to accept that Niall isn't going to slide into my DMs.
He's not going to slide, and you're not going to slide into his either.
No.
Well, we wish them the best with that relationship anyway,
yeah,
don't we?
Good luck.
In Irish news, the band Inhaler have released their debut album, and there's been some extra hype and attention on this as Bono's son, Elijah, is the lead singer.
Yeah.
And there must be a bit of extra pressure on Eli's shoulders. Oh, the poor lad. Seriously.
I can't even imagine the sort of pressure he's under. Now, he's come out and said that, sure, like, his fans don't even know who you two are, which I doubt. But apparently the album is doing really well. It's gotten pretty solid reviews, some mixed reviews, and it's looking set to be number one in the Irish charts and in the UK charts.
Is that just down to hype because he's Bono's son, do you think?
I don't know. I had never heard of the band until this week.
Okay.
And I heard it all in the context of it's Bono's son. But having said that, like, you know, I'm not cool enough.
You're not.
You know, I'm not down with the kids.
No, you're not.
As much. Yeah, I like how you're so reassuring about this.
I'm sorry.
No, you are. I'm sure there is, in that music scene of like kind of rock bands that 18 to 19 year olds and younger are fans of, I'm sure they've been known and I'm sure they're brilliant. But apparently the album is pretty solid. They got a record deal pretty quickly after they came out. And yeah, I listened to the song. It sounds very U2-esque.
Nice.
Which
is not surprising.
Yeah, I don't know if that's I don't know. Honestly, if I listened to it and didn't know it was Bono's son, would I have thought it was U2-esque? I probably wouldn't have put the connection, but I would have thought that's a very generic rock song, which is very U2-esque.
Yeah, I think music is all the same anyway, isn't it? I mean,
is it?
It's not at all. I'm only joking. But like father, like son there, I'm sure. Lastly, a little bit of film news, and I'm really excited to see this one. Apparently there's going to be a real life Barbie film.
So
we've already had the song for years, but the Barbie film is happening, is it?
Yeah, it is. It's being directed by Greta Gerwig, who, surprisingly, she's the one that made Little Women and the other Saoirse Ronan movie.
Yeah, she's not the activist.
No.
That's Greta Thunberg. I'm yes. not joking. Right.
I was like, wait, what name did I say? Gerwig. Gerwig.
Yes, you got it right.
And so she's directing it. And its release has a due date for about 2 years. And Margot Robbie is starring it. The beautiful Margot Robbie.
Brilliant.
So I'd say it's going to be pretty interesting.
We look forward to that absolute cracker. I don't know if I'm going to be watching it myself. Might just listen to the song a few more times. But sure, there you go.
Barbie Girl by Aqua.
That one. Is that it? Yeah, I love that song. I'm a Barbie girl. Anyway, look, Spirit Radio's very own Mary Elizabeth Bruton, thank you so much for sharing a roundup of the latest celebrity news stories this week.
Spirit, the Holiday Doctor on Spirit Radio is brought to you by InsureMyHoliday.ie. Wherever you go worldwide, it's got to be InsureMyHoliday.ie.
Now, it's expected that there will be millions of digital COVID certs issued this month. But who can obtain a cert? How do you get them and what can you use it for? On the line to tell us more about how COVID certs will particularly impact the travel and hospitality industries, we have our travel doctor, Joe Supple. First of all, Joe, who can get a COVID cert?
Well, Donald, you and me and everybody else, I mean, most people can't. Anyone who's been fully vaccinated are eligible to get it. I got my own cert there the other day, which is fantastic. Now, at the moment, you're just getting the paper version of it, which has your code on it, which, again, will be scanned in Dublin Airport and then scanned at your destination, which means that you can literally, within the EU, you can travel freely. You don't need to have a PCR test before you go. Also, people who've had COVID in the last 6 months, it's a little bit trickier with that because you have to basically go to the phone line system, you know, of where you were tested positive for COVID, and then they would process it that way. But, I mean, the simplest thing at the moment is for anyone who's fully vaccinated, they will be eligible to fly anywhere within the EU with no restrictions.
And to obtain one of these, are they going to be sent out automatically? Do you need to apply? What's the story?
No, if you did it in one of the big test centres, you would have filled in your form, your details with your email address. Again, do check maybe your spam folder if it hasn't come in at this stage. As I said, mine came in the other day. But it's an email and it has the certificate there with your name. The QR code has all the information there just to show that you are fully vaccinated. So that's basically the way you'll be getting it on that level. And then, of course, people can still travel as well with a PCR test if they haven't. So in other words, if a family was going and, you know, the kids weren't obviously not vaccinated, they would need a negative PCR test to fly as well.
Sure.
So that's just another thing to confirm. And again, if you got it to your GP, just maybe get in touch with your GP and they'll be able to organise to get a certificate organised for you. So, because I know a lot of people went to the GPs. And again, with your chemist as well, the easiest one at the moment is if you went to one of the main centres because you'll get it automatically. Mm. But there's great helplines there as well. If you need to phone, they'll be able to give you the information from that as well. So. And also then, you know, you do need to get like a private test if you're going to go with the PCR test. So you still need to have that. And again, it's just within the EU. So if you're traveling outside that, you need to look at the country you're flying to see what is acceptable. But I think that currently it's just the one we have is just the EU certificate.
So that's international travel. What about staycations? And the majority of people will be staying within Ireland for the rest of the summer. And hotel stays, and we've heard a lot about indoor restaurant dining also.
Yes, that's coming in as well. I mean, they're still working on the final details on that. So the situation would be when you go to a restaurant, you have to present your certificate as well. It's going to be a bit tricky, though, you know, because obviously restaurants aren't going to have scanners the way the airports will be all linked up with it. So there's a little bit of a grey area there as well, and it's going to be difficult, you know, for the restaurateurs to be able to enforce this.
Do you personally think they'll work, and are they necessary yourself?
Necessary, yeah. Well, I mean, it'll be a government. There'll be fines of up to 2,500 if somebody's found to breach it. In other words, if a restaurateur or whatever had somebody in the restaurant and didn't ask for a certificate, and there could be situations there as well. So it's all a little bit grey at the moment because, you know, they're just working out the finer details and stuff on it. But like I said, you know, I suppose somebody, you know, could potentially come in with a forged document saying that they were vaccinated. As I said, they won't have the technology like they will have in the airports. In other words, you know, in the airport you have your passport and you have your code, which they'll scan and all the information will come up that you have been fully vaccinated. So it's really just down to people, you know, to be honest about it, I suppose, as well. I suppose they just need to get indoor dining open. It's been closed for so long now.
Of course.
And this is potentially the only way to do it at the moment.
Joe Supple, travel doctor. Thank you so much for talking to us today. We'll see how all this transpires in the coming days. Thanks, Mel.
Great stuff, Don. Thanks, man.
Nice one. Right now, All Together by Mike Donaghy.
The Holiday Doctor on Spirit Radio is brought to you by InsureMyHoliday.ie. Wherever you go worldwide, it's got to be InsureMyHoliday.ie. Spirit.
Now, new figures have highlighted that 10% of pandemic unemployment, or PUP as they're colloquially known, recipients are students. And on the line to give us the latest news on PUP and financial advice to young people, we have John McNicholas, CEO of Ethical Financial. First of all, John, it's estimated 1 in 10 PUP recipients are students, like I mentioned. How much are these students earning per week or per month on PUP?
Yeah, hi, Donal. Nice to be with you. You're right. Young people have been, you know, one of the biggest casualties, actually, of the COVID. They've been really negatively affected by the closing down, particularly of the hospitality sectors. They've been particularly hit. The rate that they're getting, Donal, well, first of all, it's closed for new applicants, just to be clear on that. So we're talking about people who are on the PUP. Their rates vary, Donal, depending on what they were earning previous to the pandemic and to the PUP coming into force. So it ranges from a rate of €203 a week to a top rate of €350. So sometimes the headline rate, the 350, is what you hear quoted around a lot, but actually there are varying rates depending on what people were earning previously, you know.
And in a normal year, these students are usually entitled, are they entitled to social welfare, and how does this differ, PUP and social welfare?
Yeah, so the PUP is related specifically to the pandemic, and I suppose it was, for want of a better word, it was probably less well, or I don't know, to be kind, less well and less enforced. For, you know, if you're on unemployment benefit or unemployment assistance, that's usually a process and agencies by which you can kind of verify that, and you can, you know, be actively looking for jobs. That's the kind of typical job-seeking payments. The PUP was different to that. It was an acknowledgement that there wasn't work available, so people weren't expected to be going and throwing CVs around the place and upskilling themselves. It was to try and maintain people's standard of living while we were in a pandemic. So they are quite different beasts, and the PUP is scheduling to wind down now come September, Donal. Mm. So, you know, we are, the government are planning a full wind down of the PUP over the coming months, you know.
So it's going to be shutting down soon anyway.
Yeah. I mean, that obviously goes without saying. You're closer to the news than I am, but goes without saying there may be potential changes depending on how the lockdown and how the pandemic is managed over the coming months. But as we speak, it's due to start winding down from September time, with the final finish for some people of actually February next year. But for young people and students in particular, it'll end fairly abruptly in early September.
Well, news-wise, if there's anything the pandemic has taught us, is that we can't take anything for granted. Things are getting changed all the time.
Yeah, I mean, the intention of the support, the PUP, was to try and keep people, keep people in income when it wasn't their fault, you know, when things are just, so I suppose you're right. I mean, the rate, I won't predict the rate. You're closer to it than I am, but it isn't unreasonable to think that the PUP may be extended in due course if circumstances change, you know. But just to be clear, I suppose, for people, that there is a scheduled wind down of the payment over the coming months from September.
There are lots of students working in hospitality, such as restaurants and hotels, etc. Where there would be like some limited work opportunities. Is this going to be a long term factor? Is this effect going to be seen for the coming months or whatever it may be?
Yeah, that's a good question, Donal, of what the industry will look like, you know, when we reopen come September. Because I mean, students are finishing on the PUP in September. There isn't any doubt about that, you know. It probably remains to be seen what it'll look like. I think you may end up, if the opportunities aren't there for students to work, I suspect government will revisit that policy, in the months if we enter kind of heavier restrictions again, you know. But I suppose to answer your question as you've asked, young people will have to start looking for part-time work to support themselves if they're students come September, and start planning themselves now, Donald, for whether it be where they'll be living, where they'll be studying, and where they'll be working, you know.
And lastly, just on that point, when we have it there, for young people worried about their financial situation, what advice could you give them?
Yeah, I think usually it's to be as educated as you can, Donald. The biggest, like, finance is something that isn't really taught to us that well in schools in Ireland, you know, so we're all kind of, you know, trying our best to learn it. So I really think not avoiding it is the best idea, not hoping for the best. You'll find good information on citizens' information is excellent for support and what people are entitled to. But yeah, look, and they're always welcome to give us a call down in our own company here, Ethical Financial, and if they have any particular concerns or queries on it, we'll see if we can point them in the right direction. But I think just being as proactive as you can is really the best solution for this, you know.
John McNicholas, CEO of Ethical Financial, thank you so much for talking to us today. We appreciate it a lot.
Thanks, John.
Cheers. And you can check them out, ethicalfinancial.ie. Spirit. Now, it really has got us rethinking how we do work and life, with the pandemic forcing us, some of us, to work from home. Some of us have still had to go out and work on the front lines, fair play. But a new pilot program for employers to test the effectiveness of a 4-day working week for staff with no loss of pay has launched in Ireland. And the 6-month experiment is being organised by the 4-Day Week Ireland campaign. And on the line to tell us more, we have Joe O'Connor, chairperson of 4-Day Week Ireland. Great to have you on, John. First of all, how did the idea for this campaign come about?
Good morning. Well, I suppose the 4-Day Week Ireland campaign was launched in Ireland a couple of years ago, back in 2019, by a coalition of businesses, trade unions, environmentalists, academics and women's organisations who believed that a 4-day working week could deliver real benefits for workers, for businesses and for society. And as you mentioned, you know, obviously since then we've had the COVID-19 pandemic, and I think it has forced a lot of not just workers but employers to rethink the way that they organise work. We've been advocating since the launch of the campaign for a move towards a different model, which isn't based on measuring people based on how long they spend in the office, at the desk or on the clock, and a much greater focus on productivity, results and outcomes. And we hope that this trial next year will show that the kind of positive results that businesses already here in Ireland who have introduced the 4-day week are experiencing in terms of their productivity, their employee well-being, their carbon emissions, that can be replicated on a much broader scale with a number of different companies taking part.
And tell us a bit about this pilot program. What's the plan for it and how has it been running so far? How's it going?
Well, we launched the program a number of weeks ago. The initial interest and response from businesses around the country has been very strong and very positive. We have over 40 companies who we've engaged with who have strongly expressed an interest in taking part. And they're from many, many different sectors, different sizes of companies and right across the country. So our plan is that we're going to continue to work to promote the scheme. We're going to work with those employers to try and get as many of them to be in a position to trial this early next year. And then next January, we'll be running a training program for all of the companies who have signed up. There'll be research conducted over the 6-month trial through a partnership that we have in place with University College Dublin and Boston College. And we'll also be setting up a network of those businesses who've signed up to take part so they can share experiences and learning and community amongst each other in terms of, you know, what's working well, what's not working well. So the trial will be for 6 months. And at the end of it, we hope to be able to demonstrate that this is something which is not only good for workers in terms of a better work-life balance, but also is something that can be really effective for businesses in terms of delivering greater productivity.
And this is really going against the grain. It seems we've had this model for so long of a 5-day work week. Do you think companies might be a bit reluctant to instigate this in the long run? Or how do you think going forward the plan will take effect?
Well, as you said, we invented the idea of a 5-day week and of a weekend around a century ago. Since then, even if you consider in the last 20 years, we've seen incredible advances in technology in terms of globalization, the internet, email, and that's led to massive increases in productivity. But we're still working in developed countries like Ireland, we're still working roughly the same number of hours on average as we were in the 1980s. And we think that the time is right now to look at how we work and how long we work and to rebalance work and life. And we do think that, a four-day week and a shorter working week is something that, that's achievable in that context. And very much it is going against the grain, but the experience of companies who have done this is when they've had that conversation with their staff and with their employees and said, look, we want to make this four-day week work, but for it to work, it has to work not just for the staff, but for the business as well. And they've empowered the workers to come up with what are the ideas, what are the solutions, what are the changes to work practices that we need to make in order to deliver the same results over 4 days as we did over five. And actually what they've experienced is that those changes have brought about not just the same productivity, but better productivity over a four-day working week.
Joe O'Connor, chairperson of 4 Day Week Ireland, thank you so much for talking to us today and we wish you all the best with it.
No problem. Good to talk.
And if you'd like to find out more, you can go to www.4dayworkweek.ie.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.